So today I wanted to speak about simplicity and speak about simplicity from three perspectives. One being the inner, how one maintains an inner attitude and embodied simplicity. In the inner sense, embodiment. The other is the outer and how it is embodied outwardly through our life and our actions and the way that we live. And the third is simple acts of reverence that are needed at this time. And simplicity for me is really the gateway to what is essential. In some ways, they're the same for me, because it is through learning how to live and embody simplicity that one learns how to identify and be with what is essential for one's spiritual and mystical life, and how one maintains that inwardly and how one manifests that outwardly. So, what is essential and what is simple, they go hand in hand. And simplicity has been a cornerstone of all spiritual and mystical faiths and traditions the world over since they began. And there's a reason for that, because it is fundamental that one focus only on what one needs to focus on in order to make the journey home, to rid oneself of the false self, and to learn to live from the depths of one's being and make the journey home. So it has always been there. And it's taken different forms for different cultures and different traditions. But if you look closely, they are very similar. You know, some take on, different qualities because of the cultures. Like Zen is a very different form of simplicity than Sufism, but there are parallels. And so it has always been important and central. But as we enter, this next phase of the human story, in the context of what I spoke about last time and how one practices and lives as a mystic in the age of the Anthropocene, simplicity just becomes even more fundamental and even more important for many, many reasons. Some are very practical in that, if you are an awake and aware human being, as we are, about the ecological situation, and living simply is an ethical and responsible response. We are aware that we are all complicit in some way, because it's hard not to be unless one lives completely off the grid and makes and grows and does everything completely outside of our capitalist structures. But there are ways to be simple within that. Having less, making do with less, and again, doing what is needed, what is essential. And there are many ways that will be interpreted depending on who you are, where you are, and what your needs are. If you're single versus with a family, there's different needs, different ways that one interprets what is essential and how to make choices that reflect the awareness that you have. But that's more of an external kind of layer, so to speak. But it is going to be increasingly important that one maintains what is essential through the act of simplicity inwardly and outwardly. As the world becomes more and more toxic, more polluted, more unstable. As I've spoken about before, there is so much being thrown at us all the time, you know, and so many levels and layers to that, so much noise, psychic noise. You know, we are bombarded with physical toxicities on a daily basis, even if we don't experience it directly. It's there. It's in the water. We're all filled with some level of toxicity. It's just part of the world that we live in now. And some things we can do nothing about. And that's just the way it is. That's what it means to be alive at this time, that we are always going to be exposed to some level of toxicity, physically and also psychically and spiritually. But there are ways that we can safeguard ourselves from being too caught in everything that is being thrown at us. And simplicity and a way of being grounded in what is essential is one of the ways, one of the primary ways that we can stay grounded and centered in ourselves as we walk along this path in the midst of the times we are in. So let me first start by speaking about the inner, because everything must first be grounded inwardly and be a manifestation outwardly of that inner understanding. So first, let me put it in the context of our spiritual practices. You know, on this tradition, we are actually quite simple in the practices that we have. And there's a reason for that, that we don't have lots of practices, because this particular form of Sufism long ago devised what was essential to focus on and not have a series of practices that were not essential to focus on, so that one could do what was needed and not what is not. So, you know, the two practices that we have, you know, which is the zikr, to be in a constant state of remembrance, to first train the body to link what is most primal in creation with what is needed inwardly to transform, so that we become a constant vehicle of remembrance, both physically and spiritually. And then the meditation of the heart, where one is thrown away from the world of the ego into the realms of the true self, into a space much larger than anything that is possible to experience in this dense reality. There are two practices we have, you know, and they are, as I said, simple, and they are essential. So we don't have lots of other practices, and if you have spent time in other Sufi traditions or other spiritual traditions, you will know that most other traditions have many more practices. Many Sufi traditions have different zikrs and different complex prayers that are done, and they are completely valid within those traditions. But within our tradition, we focus purely on the Allah zikr primarily, and this meditation of the heart. And when one does those practices, you know, again, at the beginning, one is learning. When one is learning, it is slightly different, because one has to adjust and train and so on and so forth. But once one has learned the basics of those practices, then when one does them, one is attending to what is essential inwardly. You know, and one is attending to the needs of the soul and the higher self to be nourished through the space it has access to when one is thrown into a state of dhyana, when the mind is still and dampened by the energy of the love of this path, so that one is thrown beyond oneself into a space that nourishes it. And slowly over time, immersion transforms it. It is doing what is essential. It is also doing something very simple, just a daily simple practice of taking oneself out of the ego and throwing yourself into the realm of the true self. And that action, when one does that day in and day out, it expands the limited sense of self that one has into a larger space where there is room to breathe. And so much of what simplicity is about space. It is about cultivating and embodying real space outside of the limited sense of self we have when we are trapped within the ego. And so there are different ways that one attends to that inwardly. And primary ways are through these practices, because they return you to what is essential, and they cultivate simplicity by cultivating and creating space. Space that is not filled with things, but is left empty. And often when we think about what is simplicity, and perhaps even how it's manifest in collective forms that we associate with, you know, it's empty spaces, it's minimalist furniture, it's white walls, it's uncluttered. You know, the same applies inwardly. It is uncluttered. It is free of stuff when one cultivates space inwardly through practices that are designed to create that space within us. And that's what meditation really does. You know, in all its forms and all the traditions that practice it, it creates space. It frees you from the confines and the constrictions of the lower self and the ego. And when you have that space, you have room to breathe, you have room to see, you have room to understand what is really essential in one's life. When you are not just bombarded by all the clutter of one's own psyche, one's own ego, one's own insecurities, one's own, you know, the list goes on. It also creates a sense of space and a buffer between the bombardment of the noise of the world that we live in. It's much harder for the noise of the world to permeate, to really permeate and stick when there is that space cultivated through real spiritual practice. Because real spiritual practice creates an energy and a frequency which can act as a barrier of protection from the noise that we are bombarded with psychically and spiritually and physically and emotionally all the time. And so we cultivate that space, and then there is a space of simplicity that we can then live in inwardly. It is not only done through the practice of meditation. The practice of the zikr also returns you to what is essential, which is to be in a state of remembrance and communion with God. To be in a state of remembrance and communion with God. That is the essential ingredient and hallmark of a Sufi. To practice that, to always honor that thread of connection of love that is the central note of that simple prayer that we practice. To breathe out, ah, in, la. To form this thread, this circle, this endless cycle of honoring and love and prayer and remembrance and communion. That is essential. And that also cultivates space that is not, again, constricted by the ego, constricted by the noise. It lives outside of space and time. It transcends many levels. And it is so simple. The breath is so simple. It is an honoring of the simplest act of what it means to be a human being, to breathe. And it is an infusion of that simple, essential, primal, physical act with a prayer of remembrance and honoring and communion and love. And so it is a physical and spiritual embodiment of simplicity, an embodiment of what is essential, of what is primal. And this becomes the constant flow that one has in one's life through each breath. So that simplicity is always being cultivated, always being honored, always being held. Those two practices alone are really the primary way in which simplicity and what is essential can be respected, can be honored, can be cultivated. There is, of course, the importance of being attentive consciously to what we allow into our space inwardly. You know, the practices, they will create a space, they will, especially over time, regardless of how complicated we are as human beings, they will free us. But if one is able to work hand in hand with that process, with an awareness of what we allow psychologically, psychically, emotionally, to fill our inner space, then we can attend more closely to what is essential and cultivate real simplicity. So that means, you know, being aware of all the negative dynamics that grip us. And that's why there is an important focus in this tradition on freeing oneself from certain negative psychological dynamics, doing the necessary work psychologically on oneself so one is not in the grips of one's psychological negative dynamics and someone is not in the grip of the shadow. One is not overwhelmed by all the various goodies that we all have inside of us, the insecurities and the mother problems and the baggage we bring with us. Each of us has our own set of baggage. Right. Some of us have, you know, 12-piece Louis Vuitton sets. Some of us have duffel bags. But in the end, it's all stuff that we have to learn to deal with. Some of that we have to learn to accept. But if one is attentive inwardly to what one brings into one's inner space, and this is takes time. This is constant, daily attentive process. But one, you know, can, again, not allow that space to be filled. And again, real work must be done to free oneself, to accept certain parts of ourselves and so on. But it does require attention. And to be attentive not only to, you know, our own psychological dynamics, but then also to what we allow to be brought into our space, you know, whether that is other people's problems, you know, or the problems of the world. You know, we are not going to escape the problems of the world. The world will remind us constantly, as it does, of the things that are happening. But there's a difference between being part of this ongoing story of destruction and upheaval that, and unrest and falling apart that we are part of, but that is different than allowing, you know, to be gripped so much by a negative news cycle that one is emotionally fraught or, you know, overwhelmed to the point where one is unable to, again, keep a certain space inwardly. Keep a certain space inwardly is so important. And so one has to attend to that. And sometimes what the practices do, both meditation and the zikr, is they can help dispel that. You know, they have multiple purposes. You know, they have a spiritual transformative purpose, but they also can just help dispel that. If you are feeling very anxious or emotionally overwhelmed or something that is gripping you, just to be able to return to your breath and return to what is most simple and primal and essential can just create space, create breath, create openness, and return you to a sense of simplicity. The same way that meditation can do that. so that one's mind does not just go round and round and get caught and grip you, and pull you away from the space that you have already cultivated or are cultivating. So it requires daily attention. And you must recognize that, you know, this has always been the case, this need for being attentive to not being gripped by the ego and all the dramas of the world. But the level of the dramas of the world is so much greater that it requires even more attention. You know, just the amount of noise that comes through the way that we have to function, you know, through media and social media and technology. It's just, there's so much there. So much information that bombards you all the time, that clutters yourself. It's like if you look at your dreams, how many of your dreams are filled with images that are just part of the bombardment that we have thrown at us all the time? And there's not much we can do about some of that because it's the world we live in. But we can recognize that it's like an extra added layer that we have to be attentive to. But it's not just our own psychological dynamics that we must be attentive to, but it's all this other clutter which is thrown at us, and all these desires that are thrown at us, and all these insecurities that are thrown at us, and all these everything under the sun that is constantly being bombarded with. And so if we don't clear that, it just builds up inside of us. It builds up and it builds up and it can calcify, and it can attach itself to one's own inner insecurities, and it can build and it can build and it can build. And I'm sure many of you have felt that. And, you know, especially in times like we've been living through. You know, when there's even more at the surface, raw noise and anger and pain, you know, and so much of it is not ours. And one has to learn to be witnessing what is happening and attentive to what is happening without being caught in it. And if one cultivates inner space and has a space of inner simplicity through one's attitude and through one's practice and through one's attention, through one's focus, that buffer can be created and it can be maintained. And it is an essential ingredient of what it means to be a mystic at this time. You know, unless you are going to completely remove yourself from this culture and live in the forest and not encounter and engage with the world around us, you are going to have a buffer, and you are going to have a space, and you are going to learn to hold an inner simplicity, an inner state of what it means to embody that. While the world is filled with 10 million, trillion, billion things all bouncing off each other and trying to bounce off you and pull you hither and thither, we must cultivate simplicity. We must honor what is essential. And the outer form of simplicity is in some ways much easier. You know, the inner is always harder. You know, it's much easier to say, well, I will live in a smaller house, or I will not buy these kinds of products, or I will not engage in unnecessary relationships, because the inner is less defined. But the outer form of simplicity is also very important at this time. It's always been important. You know, on this path, there are not a lot of rules that say you should not do this or not do that, or only have this many items of clothing, or, you know, live in this kind of home. No, because it is implied that if you are a spiritually mature human being who takes spiritual life seriously, then you will not waste time and energy being caught in the grip of what is not real materialistically, you know, and you will recognize that, you know, you have certain needs and you must be attentive to those physical needs. You need a home, you need a place for you and your family, you need whatever. Each one of us, as I said before, is different. But, you know, if you can think that you can justify the 8,000 square foot home and the three BMWs and the yacht and, you know, the weekend home and hold that and spiritual life in the balance, then of course you're in for a rude awakening. And I know that that's not the case for any of you because none of you have enough money to do that. But if you did, you know, hopefully you wouldn't do that. You would choose a life which reflects what one's inner real purpose and desire in this life is, which is not to be cluttered and bogged down by what is not real. To work with the system of life as it is, meaning we live in the world. Yeah, we need places to live. We need ways to get to work. We need clothes. We have things we like to do. But what is essential? What really matters within that context? And not get pulled into unnecessary things, both physical things, but also emotional things or things that take our time that really don't matter. It's so easy to get pulled into all sorts of things that drain us emotionally, drain us physically, drain us psychologically. And do they really matter? What really matters? So each one of us, and this is something often you do at the beginning, you kind of take stock of your life because you have made a decision somewhere that spiritual life, mystical life is what is important. You have turned away from the world and you have turned towards the truth. And so by doing so, you have already stamped yourself with something that is essential in you, which is the desire for truth, and that you're no longer interested in what the world has, the world and all its glittery things, the world of the ego, the world of the lower self, and the world that just tries to keep you placated so that you can remain asleep. You have made that decision somewhere. But now you have to discern, what does it mean to live from that place inside of yourself? What do you let go of? What relationships and friendships and things that you did really were just filling the space and the time? And what matters? What makes your heart sing? What is an extension of your real self, of your soul? You know? You don't need to find the, you know, 20 different things to do that are in quote ways that define you as a person. It is so much what our culture is always searching for, the latest thing to do, and you know, that defines you as a person, the extension of yourself, it is part of your personality. You know, the only thing that should really matter to a mystic is the desire to return home, and everything else is secondary. And yes, one can love art and music and cooking and the living world, and all of those things are important and valid, and all the other things I'm not mentioning that are true to you and true to your soul, but what is not should go. And that is for each of you to find out what must remain, what is essential. Because if you are cluttering your outer life with so many things that do not reflect your inner life, that are not really an extension of who you are, then, you know, how are you going to be able to have that space? Life is not simple. And I don't mean, you know, your jobs or whatnot, because some people have jobs that are a reflection of their real soul and some people don't, and you have to learn to accept that. But then maybe you don't give your everything to your work in a way that also clutters a space and fills a space. You recognize it for what it is. You relate to it for what it is and not what it isn't. And that's where the discernment and the maturity comes in. Again, learning to understand what each of one's our lives require of us to maintain what is essential, to embody simplicity. Simplicity is not a white room with white pillows and, two modernist Eames-looking chairs, It is not a vegetarian diet. It can be all of those things, but it is really just an embodiment of one's inner convictions outwardly, living lightly and simply on the earth. Living lightly and simply on the earth. Spiritual seekers have always done that. They did that a lot better in the past than we do now. A begging bowl and a robe and a hut or a cell in the monastery. We are taking up so much space now in this world we live in. But we have a duty to live as lightly on the earth as we can. Because that is ethically responsible, because that is also an embodiment of what spiritual life is about, which is, again, only doing and having what you need. It doesn't mean depriving your children of toys if they want toys and need toys. It doesn't mean depriving yourself of a holiday. It doesn't mean depriving yourself of a car if you need to get to work in a car and you don't have public transportation. This is all just you figuring out what it means to live simply, honorably, ethically, aware. You have to find out for yourself what that means, but we must try and be simple, because it also means we are no longer attached. If we let go of so many things, we are not attached to what the world tells us we should be striving to have. And then we are much freer. And that always matters. To be free always matters. But especially now, when so much can change, and so much can be taken away. But to live simply, to live lightly, so you pack your bag and you have to move and you only have two bags. How wonderful. Maybe some people have a few more bags, but you know what I mean. It is just be able to pick up and go and not be attached. If one can live one's life in a way that you would easily do that, it just frees you. I was raised very much with that code that you should just be able to pack up and go and leave everything behind, only what you really need, just a couple suitcases. With every job you do, every thing you create, you should be able to leave it behind at a moment's notice. It doesn't matter. Because what really matters can never be left behind. It is here, in the simplicity that you've created in your own very heart. And that you can take wherever you go. That is not dependent on what kind of home you live, or what kind of job you have, what kind of clothes you wear, or what kind of friends you have, the kind of music you listen to, anything that people say defines us as human beings in this culture. No, you were defined by a relationship with God, ultimately. By a desire to have a relationship with God, to cultivate a space in one's heart that it can invite God to come calling. God doesn't want to come to a cluttered heart. He can, he does, but he prefers space. It's much more comfortable. Do you want to have God come to a table piled with all sorts of old magazines and leftover meals from 3 weeks ago? No, a nice empty space, so much nicer. He can make himself comfortable. Maybe he wants to stretch out. Because so much is cultivating a space to invite the divine into our being. There's so much what we do. We can practice simplicity inwardly and outwardly. We have a better chance of achieving that, of maintaining that, of honoring that. And then there's this third piece of simplicity that I wanted to speak about, which is returning to simple acts of reverence. You know, if you are in a state of remembrance, you are always in a state of reverence. And if your heart has space to sing, because it is uncluttered, then it has more capacity for reverence. But there is at this time a need to also physically and consciously practice simple acts of reverence with the earth. This is part of what it is to be a mystic at this time, which is to recognize one's role and responsibility of being an awake human being, honoring and being in remembrance of the divine, both in one's heart and through one's breath and through one's actions, and also through conscious, intentional ways of bridging what is in one's heart with the living world around us. The mystic has a real power because the mystic is in a space of remembrance with God. It is in a space of prayer. And there is power to prayer. There is power to remembrance. And when one consciously engages with the earth from a space of remembrance, a certain power can be present. Not a dominating power, but a presence that can flow through you, through the act of remembrance, into the earth. And also something will flow back. The earth needs our prayer and our remembrance, because so much of the sacred has been forgotten, has been destroyed in how we relate to the living world. And so it is the duty of a mystic, the responsibility of a mystic, not purely to focus inwardly on cultivating a relationship with God, but to embody that outwardly with the need that is most pressing. And the need that is most pressing is to hold that sacred connection with the earth, to help infuse again a sacred connection with the earth, to bring light through remembrance and prayer into the earth. Keeping that thread alive and not letting it completely get destroyed, this relationship between human and non-human, is key at this time of transition. Keeping a certain light alive is key at this time of transition, this next phase of our evolution. And many people are trying to do this. There's a huge movement of people wanting to bring a sacred connection back into the relationship with the earth. But mystics, we have a special role to play, a note to sing. We naturally are in a space of remembrance and attunement with the divine. So we have this extra, capacity. And it is what we are being asked to do. And it is also very, very simple. It is not complicated. It is not starting a project or trying to dismantle capitalist structures or, so on and so forth. Come up with environmental sustainable solutions. No. Some of you may be involved in that in your work, but this is about something else. This is about simple acts of reverence and returning to them, because they have been mostly thrown aside. We value complexity. We forgot the value and importance of simple ways of being with the earth. To walk with remembrance. To walk with remembrance. For thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years, we walked with remembrance as human beings. They scientifically start to discover, we're much older than we thought we were. It's not just 40,000, it's not just 60,000. intelligent, as they say. The story will end up being more different than they realize. It goes back even older and further. So much of that time we walked with remembrance. And we can walk with remembrance again. That is a simple way of being, simple way of honoring the earth, to walk with reverence. It's just one way. There are so many ways. Simple acts, being present and attentive to the living world. You can do it in the city. You don't have to be in some picturesque, in quote, wild setting. It matters little. But it is a duty that we have to be attentive to the earth, to breathe the life of remembrance as a human being, consciously recognizing the sacred nature of creation. And there are many simple ways we do that in our lives. We walk with remembrance. When we cook, when we use food that has been grown in the earth, and it's like there is a connection there. There are simple ways that this can be honored. My father wrote a very simple book about this, simple practices we could have, and the simple practices we can do. And they're just the beginning, you know? But it's also valuing and returning to something that is simple, that is not a created human experience. We love created human experiences versus valuing the experience of what it means to be in remembrance and connection with the living world from a space of sacred awareness. And not trying to create anything from that. Just the simple act of walking. And I'll use it again, without projecting ourselves as having an experience of walking in nature versus just walking in remembrance, in relationship with nature, is very different. Most of the times when we walk, we're walking in the forest. We're having a wonderful experience in the forest. We are doing this. We are having this wonderful encounter. We. You know, I. Versus just being present, not projecting one's own experience, but just honoring through one's attention and presence the sacred nature of creation. Recognizing, being aware, recognizing. Just like you recognize through one's breath that primal fundamental act of existence is a connection to so many levels of reality. Once you infuse it with intention and awareness, it shifts. Just like when you infuse your relationship with a living thing, a non-human living thing. We know how to do it with human beings. At least some of us, we've forgotten how to do it with the non-human world. And it's crying out for us. It is so simple. It is so essential. You don't need any stuff. You don't need any books. You don't need any phones. You can do it anywhere. Anywhere there's air. Anywhere there's ground. And it also helps remind us it's not about us. This whole experience is also like a painful lesson that we have to learn. It's not about us. Reminder, it's not about us. It's a witnessing. It's not about us. And it helps keep a certain thread alive. You have to understand, it's more powerful than you realize. To be attentive, so powerful. Attention, we have such power with our attention and we misuse it and we disregard it. And when it's infused with a mystical and spiritual purpose, not for one's own gain, it has tremendous power. It's like things can come alive. Things can shift. Things can change. Things can stay held. So inner simplicity, outer simplicity, and simple acts of reverence to the earth. So sit with that. Reflect on that, go through your closets, Marie Kondo style, my kid, keep your closets. But take it seriously. What does it mean to be a simple human being? Honor that. Strive towards that. Let go of what does not matter. Let that be a mantra.